A little bit nervous. I haven't spoken on a mark in a very long time. Hi, everybody. So, yes, we went down to the farmer's market and we were blessed to be there and I was super excited. And I teamed up with Ingrid and before I knew it, we were off looking for people to talk to. And the first people I was drawn to was a lady and a young guy selling sweets. And I have a very sweet tooth, but that wasn't why I was drawn to her. I did buy some later on. But yeah, I was looking at her and watching her and watching the young man that was helping her. And I went over to her and just started chatting to her and asking how it is that she runs the store that she runs. And yeah, she was just telling me that her son used to run the store and then he went overseas, so she took over. And she was just telling me how difficult it is because, you know, she's probably over 60. She didn't tell me her age. And I just listened to her and she was just telling me how it is difficult. They have to get there at 4:30, have to unpack, and it's a long day on their feet, and then pack it all up again and go back home. And I was waiting, I was itching, waiting to say something about Jesus. And then she said, "But God makes a way." And I was like, oh, okay, okay. And I wasn't quite sure what to do with that, but we just carried on talking about the Lord, and she was telling me all about her son and her daughter and how her son's met a lovely girl and they engaged, and she just spoke a lot and spoke a lot about the Lord and how good he was and is in her life. So then I was drawn to her assistant, a young man, and went over to chat to him and find out what his name is, what he does. And found out that he's struggling to get enrolled into a college or a varsity to study, and that's what he really, really wants to do. So, yeah, Craig and I took his number down, and we're going to do some inquiries to see if we can't just help him. And I said, "What do you mean that you can't get in?" And he just said, "No, I send the app and no one gets back to me. I phone somebody and they don't give me answers. They don't reply to my emails." He said he even went to the police station and they just look at him and they like laugh at him. And he just turns around and he leaves, you know. He is a little on the short side. And he looks like he's 16 and he's 19, you know. So maybe that's one of the things. So after chatting to the lady who then also was telling me about her brother-in-law and there's problems with his sight, I then called Ingrid, the doctor, over to chat to her and you carried on chatting to her. So I then wandered off looking for someone else to chat to. I came across a young girl who was selling bonsai kits. I know some of you over here, where are you? Also spoke to her. Yeah, that's right. So I chatted to her for a little while and played with her dog a bit, and I didn't really see an opportunity to present Jesus to her. So then I just wandered off a bit and was chatting to some other people. But apparently someone else spoke to her. Francois, I think you spoke to her as well, hey? Yeah, and Darren. Yeah. But when I go back there again, I'm going to make a beeline for her and go and chat to her, because after you chatted to her and kind of know what her story is, I feel like I'll have more to share with her. Our time ran out quite fast, we went back to meet at the parking lot. But I stayed longer. Craig left and I stayed longer and I lingered longer and I went to a lady at a stand and she sells products made of cork. And we just got chatting and I cannot explain to you how easy it was to chat to her. She just chatted to me and I chatted to her and we sat down and I was like, okay. And we just chatted and we chatted. And I brought up God because she was also telling me about things that were going on in her life, about going to Australia and the hurdles that she's got to get over to get there because her daughter and her son are living there. And I was able to just say to her, you know, God's got a way. You just have to trust him and he will make a way. And she said, no, you're right. I am trusting him. And, so next time I go back there, I also want to go back and chat to her. But I felt very relaxed, very comfortable talking to the people that I did talk to, and I felt very privileged and very honored to do that. And I understand now what missional thinking, missional living is, other than going into Lesotho and Swaziland and to other countries. It's everyday life, and we can do it wherever we are. It can be our maids, our gardeners, people that we work with, petrol attendant. It doesn't really matter. As long as we shine for Jesus and ooze our love to whoever needs it, that's what counts. So, yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
quite a similar, I think, feedback from Mary Ann. So, yeah, me and Stephen were partnered together, which was really cool. I think he was a bit more experienced in doing this sort of thing than me. I was definitely quite nervous at the beginning. So we found that young lady who was selling little bonsai trees, and I'm sure Judy knows this, but I'm kind of obsessed with those little things. And it was just, it was surprisingly easy, if I can say it like that. I think especially in my generation, and I think it's becoming increasingly so, we're kind of always surrounded by this atmosphere of don't offend, everyone's got their own idea, don't mess with it, leave them, be respectful, let them have their thing, which obviously kind of directly contradicts our mission as Christians. And a few things sort of came to mind. The one thing was how weirdly easy it was just to occasionally sort of, yeah, just bring God into the conversation. And this is going to sound very cliche, but that's okay. It's kind of gave me a bit of a mind shift, if I can say that, of maybe it's me as a person, maybe it's sort of a generational thing, but there's very much this thing of don't offend, just you want them to like you. You don't want to be that guy that's sort of like right in their face and all that. But strangely, and I think through the Spirit probably, there was just this shift in me of being like, being liked and all that, that's second prize, third prize. That's not the main goal. And right now, my goal is to make God known and just to witness for him, because at the end of the day, I'm one day going to sit before him. hear those words of, well done, my good and faithful servants. And I think suddenly that just became so much more important to me. So yeah, we chatted for a long time with that lady. I was a bit of a sucker. I bought a bonsai as well, and so did Stephen. But what's cool about that is we thought, you know what, this is a cool way that any time that we see these plants, whether they grow or not, can just be a reminder to pray for her. Another thing, so she was probably similar-ish age to me. In fact, she might have been the exact same age. There's a lot of trouble and other things, but you know what it reminded me of is that as much as in this like new age sort of thing, it's very much like a don't offend, just whatever. But something that maybe I don't consciously think about is the fact that every person I meet, whether they're Christian or not, has considered God. And that's something that I've sort of noticed more and more, is no one sort of is just, whatever. Like, they've all sort of thought about this and come to a conclusion, whatever that may be. And so while on the one hand, it can almost be a bit intimidating bringing it up, on the other hand, you're not starting almost from scratch. Like, you know that there's something there. And I think that was so cool. And it was just weirdly easy just to transition this conversation from, wow, these trees are so cool, to, wow, that's amazing that, you know, one God who's made, like, has made all these different things, look how different they are. It was just a very easy in that way, maybe because I'm sort of passionate about that sort of thing, but it just felt like, you know, this actually isn't as hard as I thought. So that's me.
Hello, everybody. So going into that Saturday, I was incredibly nervous. Going to be honest with you, I wasn't too sure what to expect. For me, like, the way that people perceive me, I'm often like the fun guy, you know? And every now and then I'm able to go into a deeper conversation, but it's very unnatural for me. So thank God I was with Janice. She was amazing. So we were walking around, and then we were just looking at the zip line, and there was this couple that was sitting there next to the SBS tank, and Janice was like, I think we should go speak to these people. And I was just like, oh, okay, let's go for it. So it was this American man and this Muslim lady from Durban, and they were a married couple. Very interesting dynamic. So she's, I think, in the States working. She's actually just gone back she's in Dubai now with her sister on her way back to the States, and the husband is still here, out in Salt Rock. What they were doing in Shangweni, no idea, but they were out in Salt Rock. And yeah, so we just struck up a conversation with them. I asked if we could sit at their table, and then like I panicked. I was like, I don't know what to say. So I was like, I made the zip line. It was like, well, that was my opening. And they were like, huh? What? Why are you telling us this? I was like, yeah, I made the zip line. And then they got interested. And somehow, someway, God just made the conversation flow. And as it worked out, Janice was chatting to the wife, and I started chatting to the husband. And just to hear his heart for America, you know, he's carrying a lot of lament for his nation and just the way, like, it has turned. And I think being South African, I think we carry a little bit of that as well, where we like carry just like a heart for our nation, and that the reality is that in the grand scheme of things, things aren't going to get better, you know. And then to try and transition that conversation, so I just got back from Zoom. This is just my conversation with the husband, and I just was talking about my experiences in Zoom and what God had done there, and then like you could see his brain starting to work. He's like very intellectual. Not really sure about what I was saying. And yeah, and there was just like an ease. We exchanged phone numbers, and I'm supposed to go to their property and go do like a quote and whatnot. But like just the possibilities of extending and continuing that relationship is amazing. And really just trusting that, you know, actually it's God who does the work. We just have to be faithful and we have to sow. And it's Him who makes the seed grow. So like I'm just trusting that something out of our conversation where I got to share a little bit of my hope actually struck true with him. I didn't get to chat to the lady as much, but beautiful couple, and it is really a lot of fun. It's exciting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, guys. And everybody else I could have used as well, but we've also got other things for tonight. But it's just the whole idea is to show that actually, you know, Rob said it last week again as well. He said that the people that God wants you to reach, He's given you everything that is required for that. So He's given you the link, you know, even like the thing of having built a zip line and then this guy is interested in a deck or something like that. There is. God actually makes a way. So it's just to make ourselves available, be there and be intentional about it and be engaged with Holy Spirit to look for the opportunity and for the moment. But it is a lifestyle that actually I think is incredibly exciting. It is totally different, you know, when you get into it. And like for Mary Ann, nervous and then actually hanging around and then finding a next conversation even easier. It's just beautiful. So God is gracious, you know. He's amazing. When we just are there, He loves it. We're carrying Him, we're presenting Him. So why would He not be with us in that moment? So Lord, I just want to thank You for these testimonies. I want to thank You for just the whole course that we've been doing together and for everybody that's participated with us. And we really do want to trust You, or we not just do want to, we trust You, Lord, to continue this work in each of our hearts and to cause it to bubble over and to impact many, many lives and to actually impact our spheres of influence wherever we are. And that You would cause a groundswell, as it were, Lord, of a tsunami wave of just presenting Christ, presenting You to the world, that would actually come through us and erupt and just break out over this whole world, Lord, and that Your fame would continue to increase and to grow, and that we could have the joy of partnering in that. It's so exciting. So bless You, Lord. I pray also for this evening, just for what we're wanting to deposit still here tonight, and I ask that You would anoint Jesse as he's going to speak just now, and each one of us to fully receive, God, what You have for us, and to break down more barriers or defenses or things that we just have set up in ourselves, or to help us to break through that initial thing. It's that first couple of seconds in the conversation that is a little bit challenging, but then it can flow if we can just obey. Just the promptings that You give us, just simply straight away obey and see how You would work through us. So bless You, Lord. Amen. So it really is very exciting. And so the people that were there all said we'd love to do it again. And the idea is for us that it becomes part of your lifestyle. So you don't always have an organized one, but it is nice to do some more in that. And for us, so we're going to go on the 18th of May again, myself and Ingrid and everybody else that would love to join us. You are so, so welcome. So we meet there. If you go up that drive towards where all the little stalls and things are, there's row number 5, the rows are numbered where your parking is. On the left, there are these big, pine trees, like 4 or 5 of them, sort of just beyond the parking space. It's a nice spot to meet there. So we'll meet there at 8 o'clock and then go in and come back again, have a little bit of feedback and like that. Okay, so you're most welcome to join us on the 18th of May. Great. So now this evening, what we thought wanted to finish off with is just to give us a little bit of a knowing of one of our mission fields, which is the Islamic people of the world, the Muslims. Because for me, they've been a people's group, if you can put it like that, that I've always previously really struggled to actually engage in conversation. And there are all kinds of barriers or things that I think that when we went to Kyrgyzstan, I realized is actually just things we've set up that is not there. And that there's a group of people that God loves and wants to see them saved. And the thing that really, and that he's actually given us ways in there. The more I've studied that and read up and done things, the more there is. And so after Jesse has spoken, I'll also share a couple of things that I've learned just in engaging with them. But just the mindset for me that really changed is the fact that we often see the Islamic people as the opposition, or and many terrorists come from there. So we almost, see them as that. I mean, I had a patient who's Israeli, and he had the one thing, and he said, "Have you ever heard of an Israeli terrorist? The only thing, it's always Muslims are terrorists." So I said, "No." Anyway, but that is the mindset that many of the all Muslims come from terrorists. So it's like he's an Israeli. Anyway, so just this, and the thing that just jumped to mind is the story of Hagar and Ishmael, obviously being born. And if you were just to read that again, in Genesis 16, where is the story of her, first of all, when she then felt pregnant, and there was this bit of a thing between her and Sarah, and then Sarah just made it very hard for her, and then she actually ran away. And then God meets with her in an incredible way. And what I was so struck with that is that, how many of us have had that kind of an encounter, or even our ancestors or something, like not face, but God actually reaching out to speaking to her audibly, that she actually, calls him, and the thing that he says, that his name, Ishmael, which is God hears, that's what it means, that he was to call her. And so it's just incredible. So it shows for me just the heart that God has for the Islamic people. And there are many there that are like set apart, almost you could say, by God to come to know him. But how are they going to do it unless we reach out to him? Do we, in that idea of proximity, bringing Jesus close to them? And so this thing, and I just want to read in Genesis 16, it says, "And then the angel of the Lord told her, 'Go back to your mistress and submit to her.' And the angel added, 'I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count.'" It's like God is doing it. So the millions of Muslims or Ishmael's descendants that's in the world, it was actually something God did. It's not like the devil created them or anything. And I don't believe he's created people to go to hell. He's created people because he wants them to discover him and come into relationship with him. And then he said, "You are now pregnant and you will give birth to a son, and you shall name him Ishmael," which means God hears, "for the Lord has heard your misery." And then later, she goes back, and then 13 years later, or actually 14, I think it is, when Isaac is born, and then again there was this story, and actually she was then sent away, so with Ishmael. And then she's again totally in despair and thinking that she's just going to put the boy under some shade and just going to watch him to die, but wait for him to die in the desert there. And then God again comes to meet with her, and that's in Genesis 21, verse 17. It says, "God heard the boy crying, and the angel of God came to Hagar." And that angel of God, some say that's actually Jesus. That's when it refers to an alternate angel of God, is actually Jesus. That, don't know exactly the theology of it, but anyway, whether it is or isn't, it's an angel of God called to her from heaven and said to her, "What is the matter, Hagar? Do not be afraid. God has heard the boy crying as he lies there. lift the boy up, and take him by the hand, for I will make him into a great nation. And then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. So she went and filled the skin of water and gave the boy a drink, and continues. And then he was with the boy, and he grew, and he became an archer in the desert. But it's just a, you know, so it's not a people that is cast out from the start. And in John 10, 16, Jesus says that I have got sheep that are not of this pen, you know, from another sheep pen, another fold. And so I believe that is all these other, that was the Jewish people, but we know all of us Gentiles and all of that too is part of that. But they just as much are people that deserves being witnessed to and being told. So Jesse is going to share with us with that, and then I'll close. Thanks, Jesse.
Oh, thanks, Francois. Thank you just for the privilege to share tonight. Most of what I'm sharing tonight comes out of our trip to Kyrgyzstan. It's more reflective, and it's just some things that have really struck me about Muslim people and Islam as a religion. Why is understanding Muslims important? Well, our prejudices are probably the main thing stopping us from engaging Muslims, which is interesting. I think, yeah, Francois just mentioned it, that we have this almost weird barrier between us and Muslims. We see them as like the opposing team. It's funny you said those things. I was thinking those exact things. And almost like it's us or them, you know. But actually, we've built up these prejudices in our own heart. And part of what I want to do tonight is take you on a journey to both understand Islam as a religion and then understand Muslim people as a people group, a culture and identity. And hopefully it helps you drop some of those prejudices that you have in your heart, that makes you look at them as who they are, image bearers of God. So that's kind of my purpose with you tonight. I'm a high context person. The more context I know about a situation or people or something, the better. It means I can give a really informed answer if someone asks me a question. So part of going to Kyrgyzstan was like this epic download for me, because I felt like I really got to understand people right down to why they believed what they believed. And so tonight, I hope to just give you more context so that you can go out and approach people, Muslim people, in a way that gives you confidence. However, even if you don't have a lot of context, this is also something I've learned, is that, sure, you can say, yeah, I'm really timid if I don't know much about a situation. That was textbook me for a long time, until I discovered this thing called curiosity. You don't have to know a lot about a person to just be curious about who they are, who God has made them to be. Just maybe a brief, quick example of that was last year. I was sitting with one of my clients, and we were putting together a marketing presentation, and it was kind of going very slow, very tedious. We're in this little boardroom, and she's Hindu. And she's like, oh, I'll be right back. I just want to go get some samosas. So she runs off, and she comes back, and she sits down. She's like, would you like a samosa? I'm like, yes, please. Free food. And she's generous. Like, it was great. And then she's like, yeah, I'm busy fasting. But now she's like eating a samosa. So I'm confused. But the curiosity switch came on. And I was like, oh, why do you fast? Simple question to ask, okay? So she explained the whole thing. The whole thing. And I was like, that's amazing. But as she's explaining more, I was getting context. So I started asking more questions. And by the end of it, she said, but I suppose that's the same with all religions. We're just trying to be good people. And I was like, oh my goodness, did the Lord just hand an opportunity on a plate to me? So I said, well, that's actually not what Christians believe. She's like, really? Why? And I'm like, this is too easy. And I shared the whole gospel with her. And she just looked at me. She said, wow, that is different. And then her phone rang and she got up and left. And I was like, up, 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 up. But I think I learned so much out of that encounter that it really is, even if you don't know much about a person, curiosity and just asking them about their lives will open up so many doors. So, what is Islam? Islam is the given belief system by Muhammad, the Prophet Muhammad. We've all heard of him. It came from a man who was believed by Muslims to be a direct descendant of Ishmael from the Bible. It's recorded in one of their hadiths, which is a supplementary or ancillary writings to the Quran, which help people understand the Quran a bit better. It's written there that Ishmael, and his name is Ishmael in Islam, not Ishmael, and Hagar were taken to Mecca by Abraham. And there's this whole long story. I read it this afternoon. It's really interesting. They believe that Abraham brought them down to Mecca, and this is where they settled, in Mecca. And it's what later made Mecca this sanctified place, was that their roots are so deeply in that region. This event would then put the time frame at almost 2,700 years before Islam actually started as a belief system. So that's good to just put into perspective that actually this nation that Francois just spoke about emerged in the desert and they became a people. And you'll hear next that there were Christians down there as well. So around 600 AD, the Prophet Muhammad wrestled with an angel in a cave. And this angel is allegedly Gabriel. You can go read all the writings. And was given the words that are in the Quran over a 23-year span. So it wasn't this instant download he got given the tablets. It was an angel wrestling with him in a cave, which is very interesting if you have a lot of Bible context, because that just sounds very sketchy. Like, what's going on there? And his encounter with the angel caused him, his first encounter, because he had many over his decades, it caused him to go and speak to his wife's cousin, who was a Christian. And this Christian said, well, you must be a prophet sent by God to the Arab people. And so he went out and he started proclaiming what he had heard from this angel. Now, whether this whole story is true or not, that's not what we're going to discuss tonight. However, I will leave Galatians 1:8 with you and 2 Corinthians 11:14 and 15 with you. And you can draw your own conclusion about the origins of Islam. So, where did the book come from, right? So if he kind of got these words over his lifespan, where did the book come from? The Quran was only compiled after he died. And kind of put together by this little council who really wanted to preserve his teachings. So they sent emissaries far and wide to find people that he fought with in battle and led alongside, etc., etc., to try and scratch together all the things that he said, to try and bring them out of memory and to write them down and to record them. An interesting fact is that many of the hadiths, those additional writings, hold into question the Quran's textual integrity and not being preserved over time. So it just gives you more context into the writings. They're not as pure as they started out being, there have been many adjustments along the way, and you'll realize in a second why. It's because two of the main factions, if I can call them that, or sects within Islam, are like highly political and at each other's throats. Okay. So there are two offshoots of Islam, Sunni and Shia. You might have heard those names before. Shia literally means Shi'at Ali, which is the party of Ali. And these are the direct descendants of Muhammad. And the Sunni were made up by a whole lot of his trusted council and elders. And they were at the throats of the family. It's hugely political. You go and read it, you're like, this is like a modern political novel. What is going on here? And with that, they also have different pillars. So we'll all be familiar with the five pillars of Islam. Not with all of them. You might have heard of that term before. So the five, the five pillars of Islam that are generally understood worldwide is, number one, the testament of faith. Two, prayer. Three, the mandatory giving or alms for the needy. Four, fasting. And five, the pilgrimage to Mecca, Hajj. Okay? But then within Shia, they're kind of, and again, no one wants to give legitimacy to it, but they believe that these additional five are part of, if you're a hardcore Shia Muslim, you believe that these are part of the pillars. which is number six, jihad, which you might have heard of. It's commonly known as holy war. That's not what it actually means. It actually means struggle or effort. It doesn't mean holy war. But it is the struggle against the enemy for righteousness. Now, righteousness is subjectively there. They have their own idea of what righteousness looks like, but that's what jihad is. It's the fight for righteousness against the enemy. Number seven, it's the promotion of good. And number eight, the dissuasion from bad. Again, good and bad are defined by a lot of things. I mean, the Quran is not very crystal clear like we are used to from the Bible. Things contradict each other. They go off on tangents. It's very confusing. Number nine is this term tawala, which is love of faith and the chosen of God. So it's very community. And number 10 is the disassociation from enemies of Islam starting from the first caliph, which is the Sunnis. So right there, they're like, you know, we're against you. And you would have seen some of those politics play out recently when Iran shot missiles to Israel and Jordan shot them down. You're like, why is a Muslim nation defending a Jewish nation? It's because one is Sunni and the other is Shia. Crazy, right? It's crazy. So where are they now? Pete, I've got two maps there. Can you show the first one? They are in order. This is just a bit of an understanding. So this is a percent of the median total population. So you can kind of get an idea of how many Muslims as a percentage of that nation are around the world. So, I mean, there's a massive history with regards to Indonesia and Malaysia, that area. Like, I want to know how it got there. That just seems like a very interesting history lesson. This just gives you an idea of how far east it went. You can see they came up against a very strong Chinese, defense. And it's why a lot of Muslims in the western part of China today are still persecuted by the Chinese. But yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, East Africa, it's super interesting, right? And then that second map, Pete. So this here, so you can see on the legend over there, we've got the Sunni and the Shia, and even within those two different sects, there are many other different tangents of belief as well. And you can kind of see how they're distributed across the world there. So you can see the Shia, you can see Iran over there, and then you can kind of see how colonial borders, much like in the beginning of the 1900s, actually split a lot of those areas up. So you can see how a place like Iraq would be an absolute hotbed of violence because you've got three like warring tribes against each other, or warring factions of Islam against each other. It's pretty crazy. So that just gives you an idea of the distribution. You can see down there in South Africa, particularly looks like Durban and Johannesburg, however they're trying to highlight it there, are predominantly Sunni Muslims. So that's predominantly the type, if I can use that word, of Muslim you'll find in Durban is a Sunni Muslim. There are a couple of little communities within Durban, though, of Shia Muslims. And there has been conflict in Durban. Not too long ago, I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago, there was a beheading at a mosque. And it was right here in, I think it was in Phoenix. And it was a Shia in a Sunni mosque. And the police arrived like as it happened and they shot the guy dead. But that just gives you an idea of just the struggle even within their own religion. So that's Islam in a nutshell. I could go for a very, very long time. Sarah, did you experience like all the download when you were in Kyrgyzstan? Yeah, it really was 3 hours, I think. We sat in this room and I just sat there with my mouth open. I was like, you've got to be kidding. This is amazing. But that is Islam in a nutshell. So who are Muslims, right? Maybe before I get into Muslims, I want to just share a brief story from a book. The book is by an author, Andy Crouch, and he wrote this book, The Life We're Looking For, How to Reclaim Relationship in a Technological World, It is a really good book. I can highly recommend it. But he tells the story about being stuck at Chicago's O'Hare Airport, and he's walking around in the domestic terminal, and he describes how big it is. It's amazingly big. And he's walking around. He needs to get some exercise after flying a lot. And he tried everything to stay off his phone. And so he said, well, I'm just going to walk around and I'm just going to start noticing people for who they are. And what he would do is he would not quite lock eyes in a creepy way, but he would like kind of look at people and then look away. And he would just say to himself, image bearer, image bearer, image bearer. And he said he lost count after about 1,000. He just, because he was just walking around in circles, he had like a very long layover. And image bearer, image bearer, image bearer. So when I ask the question, who are Muslims? They're image bearers of God, which means that they have the same God-given faculties of reason, love, expression, curiosity, joy, and faith. They're people. They're people, guys. They're people. And I think in South Africa, which, if I can be blunt, is a very cutthroat place, we can very lose our sense of humanity for maybe not in, one, in our Red Point community, because that would just not be according to our faith, but very easily on the roads, very easily in the shops, very easily taking a walk at Shangweni Market or on the beachfront. We can very easily lose our perspective of humanity. And people are God's people. They're his image bearers. So I want to leave that with you. They have the faculty for reason, for love, for expression, for curiosity, for joy, and for faith. So let that take down your walls, whatever walls you have. Muslim is the outward faith, culture, or identity, and Islam is the religion system. So it's good to distinguish between the two there. Muslims are made up of a vast number of different people groups, thus different expressions and flavors of their lives. What is the picture that you have in mind of a Muslim person? Can you think of that picture right now? If I say, imagine a Muslim person, do you have an idea? What's that? Yeah, hijab? Yeah, the clothing, right? Maybe they come from a certain part of the world, right? Like you've just maybe got a picture of an Arab in your mind. Pete, can you put that third picture up? I made this afternoon. They're all Muslim people. They're all Muslim. And I purposefully typed in like Turkish Muslim, Kyrgyz Muslim, Indian Muslim. Because this isn't one type of people group. This is a whole society. This is a whole community. It's a global community. Much like us, right? Go to Japan, we meet Japanese Christians and we feel at home in their church. I went to Cape Town. It's like a different country. I went into a church and it felt like home. I was like, oh, my people, you know. America, Kyrgyzstan, look at all of them. Image bearers of God. Okay, you can take the picture away. Thanks, Pete. Actually, leave it up for the duration of the time. How about that? They are devoted people. They pray 5 times a day. Did you know that? Does Jesse pray 5 times a day? I'd like to. They keep to a very rigorous fasting calendar. If they truly hold to their pillars, they will make a pilgrimage to Mecca one day. There's a talking topic right there for you. Have you done your pilgrimage to Mecca? The one thing I learned in Kyrgyzstan was just in our team times learning about Muslims and then also just in our experience on the streets. It's just how devoted some of them are. I mean, they're so devoted. And I feel like this kind of lines up. When a Muslim person decides to follow Jesus, they are all in more than some Christians sometimes. Why is that? It's because they've had a pattern of devotion their entire lives. They know what devotion is. If you want to learn how to be more devoted in your faith and to Jesus, we got a lot to learn from them, actually. And it's why actually some of them have these incredible power encounters where they have dreams of the man in the white cloak. Like, have any of you ever had dreams of the man in the white cloak? I haven't. And like, they've had a personal encounter with the living Jesus in their dreams. Like, I mean, that only comes from a place of devotion. The only problem with their devotion is that it leads to nothing. It's this constant hunger for the rest of their lives, and it's rewarded with nothing. Their faith system is designed to hold them in bondage and to keep them wanting more. So they don't have any assurance here on earth of where they're going. They're trying everything they can on earth if it takes them 90 years to hopefully get them into paradise. Interesting. Crazy. We don't have to do that. We were bought with a price, and that was it. We just have to trust and place our faith in Jesus and his finished work. It's to keep them wanting more without ever satisfying them. It's a classic case of you earning your way into heaven. And it's why, if we as Christians fall into that trap, we burn ourselves out so quickly. It's because that is not how God designed salvation to be. Devout or Orthodox Muslims do not celebrate the arts like we do. That was something I learned over there. We were with a lady out in a rural area of Kyrgyzstan, and I asked an innocent question, and she's from a really persecuted, small people group. And I asked the curious question. I was like, do your people have musical instruments? And she said, yeah, we used to a very long time ago, but then with Islam, like, nah, it's all gone now. I mean, that's a people group who you and I will never hear the music performed by that people group ever in our lives, because all their instruments were destroyed over 1,000 years ago, and that was it. I mean, doesn't that cause you an ache? We have the joy, I mean, the Roots team have the joy of learning a musical instrument during their years. Something that they can go on to express their joy and their worship to God. And there's a whole culture of people who just, if they're devout enough, they don't believe in that. That's not a priority in their lives. How dead is that? As modernity has also crept into Islam and into Muslim culture, most Muslims around the world, I did learn, agree that music is fine to listen to as long as it doesn't refer to alcohol and sex and the consumption of those things. Totally get it. But in some parts of the world, musical expression is completely abolished, like we experienced in Kyrgyzstan. It's good to know, because sometimes the things that we take for granted, like we'll say, oh, did you listen to this song? And a person might be like, oh, no, I don't really listen to music. Some of the things we take for granted are just not the experiences of other people. The things that bring us joy are just not the experiences of some of the Muslims that you'll work with or you will meet. Another thing is that women have no to very limited rights. If they do have a few limited rights, it's only mostly a recent adjustment because of the pressures of modernity. It's good to understand how this fits into where they're at in life, especially if you are a woman in here and you are engaging with a Muslim woman. Know that maybe your experience of a weekly park run isn't her experience, because her husband would just never allow it. It's good to kind of place that in our minds when we're engaging in conversation. So are Muslims violent? Are they terrorists? I think the distinction that I made earlier between the two kind of offshoots of Islam would explain that. With majority of Muslims being Sunni, killing the the infidels is not one of their pillars. However, with Shia Muslims, it is part of it's their rite of passage. It's part of what they believe. Does that make them inherently violent? No, but they may commit violence in order to appease what they believe they're doing unto God. So, I think about that young guy that we met in Turkey who was, on the brink of being recruited as a child soldier into ISIS. You think these are ordinary children. They're young children who just want to play. They're not born violent. But they're growing up in a system that actively promotes that because it's all to feed a political gain at the end of the day. So, all that being said, who are Muslims? This was one thing that we learned over in our Kyrgyzstan workshop, is that there are people who have deep life questions. We learned that devout Muslims, they will ask themselves that question, how can I be a better Muslim and get into paradise? That's what they're obsessed with. They make it their life goal. They make it their life decision making to be a good Muslim so that they can get as many points as they can to get into paradise. How many points do you need? They don't know. They're just getting as many as they can. Does that guarantee paradise? They don't know. They're just getting as many points as they can. Another interesting type of Muslim that we learned about in Kyrgyzstan is that has really deep thoughts and questions about life are your more folky, native, naturalistic Muslims. So in Kyrgyzstan, you've got this kind of weird blend of Islam and shamanism, like tribalism. We'd call it an African religion. Traditional African religion mixed with Islam. So they kind of have that in different parts of the world. And one of their primary things is, how can God heal me? That's one of their big life questions. How can God heal me? How can God make our living situation better? We won't necessarily encounter a lot of those kinds of Muslims in South Africa who ask those deep questions, but it is something to be aware of. And then you also have your secular Muslim who also asks some very deep questions about life. They're asking questions like, in a post-Islamic worldview, I need wisdom. I need wisdom for life. How can I live well? How can I live in a way that provides for my family and uses all of my giftings, for lack of a better word, all of who I am to make a difference and how can I live well? That is a question that is asked. They're not really in it to, because they need to get into paradise. They're not very devout in that sense, but they are still wondering, how can I live well? What is the wisdom for life? And they draw from a very Islamic context. So if we are engaging in Muslims, this is something we learned, it will go well with us to listen to their heart need and speak to that. And this takes discernment, this takes listening to a person. We do it well in our community, Red Point Church. Nobody really just asks you how your weekend is. They're like, how was your weekend? We're like that at Red Point. We get into the heart of a person's struggles and we try and dig deep within the scriptures and with God to help them and to minister to them. And we can do that with Muslims. Find what the heart need is. Find out what they truly are yearning for in the conversation, and you will find it. It might be an off-the-cuff thing, like the engagement I had with my Hindu client. Oh yeah, I suppose all religions lead to the same thing. There's a heart cry there. She wants to be a good person, and she's just having a go at it. There's a heart cry there. I now know how to engage with her at another stage. What else can we learn about Muslims? These are just some things that I wrote down as I thought about some of the Muslims that I know. They are some of the nicest and most generous people you will ever meet. Extremely generous and very nice. They look out for the welfare of others. There are others, though, who are very secular in their belief and are also just very hard people. I recall some story of a friend of mine who worked for a Muslim company here in Westmead. He said it was one of the hardest things. It was, I mean, some of the stories that he would share were just some of the craziest stories I've ever heard of workplace trauma, for lack of a better word, and workplace abuse. But there are some of the nicest, most generous people that I've ever met. And they also genuinely care about a lot of things that we genuinely care about as Christians. They care about raising children who follow in the footsteps of their faith. They care about that. They're not just doing it because they're following like a thing. They actually care about that, much like we do, right? And leading their families well. They're very, especially Muslim husbands, are very protective about what enters the household. Now, that can go both ways, but there's something curious there, something interesting there that I think we can learn from, but it's also a bit of common ground that we share with Muslims. They lead their family, they take that well. They love to build and lead communities. They take responsibility for life. I've loved observing that about Muslims worldwide. Many see it as a threat. You know, they get a bit racist or xenophobic. Oh, they're moving in. They probably take building community and leading community a lot more seriously than actually some Christians do. I think we can actually learn a lot from that. But they have a high value of it. That's why they are all over the world. I don't think we value it enough, and that's probably why we have some struggles in our mission field. Something to remember. And lastly, they are concerned about your spiritual life as much as you are concerned about theirs. So be ready for that conversation. Know that they're probably going to come back at you with some answers for life. And I'd say, based on, I think, just some of my experience being in Kyrgyzstan and listening to a lot of our workshop teachings and even what I've read through the history of Islam, and I've only scratched the surface, I want to give you a bit of encouragement here and confidence. I think it's very hard to go from being a Christian to being a Muslim, to being a follower of Islam. I think it's very hard to go that way around. But the mission field is open. I think it's a lot easier for a Muslim to go to convert to Christianity, much because actually that yearning that is deep inside of them is satisfied when they meet face to face with Jesus. So how do we love Muslims? The same way we love people. And if you don't have that, then you need to ask God to give you that love. That was something we learned in Kyrgyzstan as well, is actually, the love that we need for Muslims is the same love that we need for everybody else, and that can only come from God. And so if there really is somebody, maybe as we've been speaking tonight, that pops up into your mind, somebody that you need to engage with that is a Muslim, but you just don't know how. Maybe you've got old Western prejudices from the war on terror. I had that. I grew up after 9/11, and I was a young boy, so I mean, I watched the whole war on terror start, and like you hear all the stories, you're like, oh yeah, like Muslims are bad, you know, they're terrorists. And maybe it's been so deeply put in you that you can't love people who believe in Islam. Actually, ask God. God, reveal your love to me that I can go and love this person and lead them to you. And if not a Muslim, if it's a Hindu person, I think a lot of what I've said tonight also applies to that. So be encouraged, guys, and yeah, all the best. Sure.
Thanks, Jesse. That's wonderful. It really is very interesting. It's wonderful to actually know a bit more, you know. It just breaks down those barriers. And so it's really meaningful. It's meaningful to engage with it. So I just thought, just in closing, I'll only be 2-3 minutes. But it's just some things that's helped me just when I engage with Islamic people or Muslims is, first of all, like I said, is allow God to love them through you. You know, it's not yours. Allow God's love to flow through them. But it's that whole idea that we see people as worthy of God and of, you know, the opportunity to get to know Jesus, not just as a prophet, but actually the Messiah, you know, the way we see Jesus. And then the second is to always have respect for their faith and be curious. It's an easy conversation opener. And one thing for me that's really helped is I thought that you don't want to offend by challenging or something, or even, you know, raise a topic of their faith or something, but actually they welcome it. It's actually very easy to converse with them about their faith, because that's the way they even programmed. It's the whole thing that they earn. For them, it is all about earning your way into what they call the garden or paradise. It's heaven. And it is all about the good outweighing the bad. That's their belief system. So their belief is that when they die, they would face Allah, and then there would be an angel, actually first Muhammad, but there would be an angel who would present all their good deeds and one who presents all their bad deeds. And then it will be weighed on the scales, and based on that is what would happen to them. So it's really they want to. And they also gain points by engaging you in the conversation to convert you. So they actually welcome that conversation. So that's wonderful to do that. So it really is an easy conversation. It's not to be afraid of, you know, the challenge. And then their idea is that they want to convert you. So there's generally two or three arguments that will come up straight away. The one is the fact that we follow a corrupt Bible, because through all the translations, the Bible has been corrupted. And they believe the Quran is pure and has never been touched. But actually, as Jesse has said, is completely wrong. If you just know how it came about, Muhammad did not, he was illiterate. He couldn't read or write. He was by revelation, these things were given to him. And after he had died, bits and pieces were gathered from all over the world to try and put together. And there were actually a few of them put together. And then the one most dominant guy took the lead, and all the other things were destroyed. So it's not like this Quran is so pure and it has been changed. But they don't know it. They think it isn't. But your point is, don't argue with them about that. What you say is, the difference between our faith and their faith is that they see the actual word, the actual written text. They would never, like we, just drop the Quran or something. You know, I was seeing it and Tula this morning is reading, and then the drop of that. That is like, whoa, that's because this actual is so holy for them, the actual Quran. And they would, and they get more points if they read it in Arabic. Whether they understand it or not doesn't matter. So it's the actual word. Is what it is. But so you can just say to them, I understand it, and I see, you know, how. But for us, the difference is that we believe in what it teaches. It's the actual understanding of the word and the application of it that is what Christianity is about. And so we welcome all the learned people and that can help us understand it better, so that we can actually get God's heart and what is behind it and live that out. And that already breaks down some barriers, because it makes them think, what is the meaning of me just saying a prayer? All these prayers, they say they have their prayers, they don't know what they're praying most of the time. So it is the understanding is not there. And when you do it, God has given us the faculty to understand, to reason, or that they want to engage it in their faith, but they're not allowed to actually. They're not encouraged to understand the Quran. You're not to ask questions about it, because the Quran is so confusing. I've got one in a engagement with one of my patients. We did this exchange, and she brought me a Quran, I gave her a Bible, and so it's an ongoing conversation, which has been beautiful and exciting to see. And so the whole thing is, and if you read it, it's bits and pieces here and there, and it's like no story is actually followed through to the end. It's very random and all over the show, and so they don't know it. They don't follow. But the one thing that you can know is they are encouraged to read the Quran and actually to read the Bible. So you can challenge them with it. And if they just properly read the Quran, even in English or in the language that they understand, they can actually find Jesus in it and the truth, because it's there. And Jesus is the one who performs miracles. Jesus is of virgin birth. Jesus will come again. All of that is in the Quran. So, and he is the much superior prophet, actually, if they think logically. So you can gauge their logic around it. from reading the Quran than what Muhammad is, because Muhammad has died, he's not going to, the whole story. Anyway, so that's the one thing, is that you say actually, because for you it's the physical, for us it is the understanding and the application of the word that is different. So that immediately, they can't then, you know, break down this whole thing. And then the other is to actually say that they, what they say to you is that, and I've listened to some of these, I had a conversation guy who said to me, I was listening to this very learned Islamic teacher, your imam, and I watched some of his YouTube clips and things, and in that he says, he speaks against Christians, and he says, if you can show me now that Jesus claimed, you know, from the Bible that he is God and that he is to be worshipped, I will become a Christian, because he never does that. And that's what they all tell you, that Jesus never actually claimed to be God, and that is a complete nonsense. We know that. It's all over if you just read it. That is everywhere. That's the very reason that Jesus is crucified, is because he claimed to be God. That's what it is. If you, the John 10 verse 33, you, a mere man, claim to be God. That's the reason why they wanted to stone him at that occasion and pursued him. So you can, if you just know that, you can say to, no, you know, let's look at it. I'll show you. It's so easy. There's like there. And then immediately there's a change. And the fact that he's always welcomed worship. He's never said don't. Even at his birth, the wise men came to worship him. And it's all throughout that he is to be worshipped. So it's the easy answer. Don't be thrown by that. You know, and you think, where did Jesus say, you know, worship me? There's not like that verse or something. And then the other is that you can say to them, just, you know, also read the Bible, because you are challenged, you are called to do that. That's one of the holy books, is the Bible, the Gospels also. And make a comparison for yourself. Draw up a comparison between Muhammad and between Jesus. And decide for yourself, who do you want to follow? And for one of it is actually, Muhammad himself says in chapter 46 of the Quran, verse 9, he says, I am but a mere warner, and I myself do not know what will become of me. And you can say to my, one of my arguments is that the end objective of all of our faith of is to go to heaven, is to spend eternity not in hell, but in heaven. They've got the same idea. There is paradise, but what heaven is another point, but that's a fact. So won't you rather follow someone as a leader who tells you that if you follow what I teach you, you can know for sure that you're going to go to heaven? Or would you want to follow someone who himself does not even know where he's going and what the outcome of his life would be? I mean, that if that doesn't make you think, you know, that's like, there's things which can let them dig it deeper. And I believe that that conversation can carry on, and there's beautiful things. You can say the comparison of what we anticipate of heaven, and for them, the garden or paradise, the difference between that. Just think logically, because what they are promised in eternity is the things that they are forbidden to have on earth. It's literally like that. It is the total difference. I don't know if too much time on all that, but that is literally what it is. Whereas for us, it is not about, you know, things like for them, it is there would be rivers, there's a garden underneath it, which are rivers flowing with milk and with honey and with wine, and you can have as much wine as you want. Whereas on earth, they're not allowed to drink fermented milk. So it's like all these things. Then there's obviously wives and sex and all that stuff. It's totally bizarre. So you can say, where do you want to go? In a place where you've got like endless rivers of wine, endless orgies and things that's going to, for eternity. I mean, what is that? Or do you want to have a personal, intimate relationship with the Father, with the one that you actually want? For us, it is to be with Jesus. It's like to be with God. It's to have face-to-face, to, you know, and all the... So that also is a big thing that I believe will turn around in their minds for... Okay, there's more, but... So we close them. So Lord, I just thank you for this incredible, incredible gift of life in you. The absolute joy of having you as our Lord and Savior, having you as the one who calls us into relationship, the one who restores intimacy with the Father, the one, it is just incredible. And I do pray that we would be so captivated by you, Jesus, that our love for you would just continue to grow and grow and be so overflowing, bubbling over, that we cannot help but share you, cannot help but make you known, cannot help but just have you on our lips in the most natural, incredible way that it cannot even offend, because who can be offended by somebody speaking about the one they love and getting lyrical about that one, and with authenticity and realness, not accusing or anything. And so I just pray for that, Lord. We just want more of you to flow through us and to touch this world that is so desperate to find you. So help us, empower us, and let us see the many opportunities that we have, I pray. Bless you, Lord. Amen. So just once again, thank you so much for journeying with us. And if you're keen to join us on the 18th of May, we'll see you there. Otherwise, in the life of the church. So bless you.